driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Give it back for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm here, Mikey Fornelli, alongside Braden Fogerson and David Moses, three of us who were up late last night watching that Redbird men's basketball game. We were all in that press conference, which lasted most of an hour, but here we all are to give you the best of us, 45 minutes early than usual. So if you paid attention to our social media posts this week and you're with us on time, congratulations, you're going to get a full show from us. David, I'll start with you first. You had a, you filmed a story last night for the men's basketball game for TV. How did that go?
Yeah, it was pretty good. We got some good footage. I was able to ask some pretty good questions, like you said, at the press conference to Coach Peden, the visiting head coach, a couple players for ISU. So it was really good. I always enjoy those experiences, and looking forward to doing more.
And Braden, you and I called the game on ZND, and I think we had a good call. I think it was a fun game together. Oh, yeah. You say so?
Yeah, no, we did. It was really a lot of fun to be able to watch. It's always, you know, there's no way to not have a good time at Redbird or at CEFQ Arena, yeah, to be honest. But, you know, in general in that game, like, it was a tale of two halves. You had a really, really hot start for the Birds, and then they finally started kind of collapsing a little bit, started crumbling, and you saw UIC finding ways to kind of take advantage of some options in terms of making adjustments in that game. And they were able to, you know, pull things together and bring it back to a tie game in time for overtime. But the Birds, I don't think they trailed throughout that entire game. So
No, they never trailed once.
You know, it was really a bunch of different types of games all rolled into one. You had a good overtime finish, and in the end, the Redbirds add another to win column.
Yeah, so we're going to start the show continuing to talk a little bit about Redbird men's basketball, but I'll run you through a bit of a different schedule to start. So we always start with our Redbird recap, where we kind of get a lot of our Redbird recapping, for lack of a better term, out of the way early on. But today we're just going to focus on men's basketball to start the show. Then we're going to get into a little bit of NFL, a little bit of NBA, and then we're going to circle back and do the team that's at the top of their conference, the women's basketball team. That'll be at about 6 o'clock before the women's basketball game tonight, coming to you live at about 6:20. That's going to be Tim Zalabek and John Rosny on that call, and Tim and John are going to join us actually on the Red Zone for the last 10 or so minutes of our show, and we're going to have a little group thing, so that should be fun. But for now, we're going to talk some Redbird men's basketball. So as we talked about last night, a win against UIC in overtime, a game in which they led by as much as 13 at least once in both halves, and ended up almost losing that one, but never gave up the lead despite it getting tied at a couple points. Ended up getting that 6-point W after mostly controlling overtime, it seemed like. But this is a USC team that hasn't won in 2023. This is their 10th straight loss, the Redbirds' two straight wins. And I think it got a little too close for comfort, David Moses.
Yeah, we saw it, you know, firsthand. The backcourt for UIC was elite, making questionable, like, they were almost lucky shots. They shouldn't have been really hitting them at the rate that they were. ISU's defense started to waver a little bit, and then Coach Peden talked about it late in the second half. They had to make defensive adjustments to be able to, you know, continue with the lead and continue with momentum. Definitely, you know, you just said it. UIC, you know, they've struggled a lot this year. Last 10 games they've lost. Their last victory was against the Redbirds, which was, like you said, back in 2022. You know, it shouldn't have been this close, but I will say this. The past two games for ISU, I've been able to, you know, get a front row seat too, because I've done it for one of my classes, TV10. ISU, this team looks like they are ready to finally hit their mark, hit their peak. Coming off of a 4-game losing streak after these, before these past two games, it looks like they're starting to come together and say to each other, we've got to turn this thing around. You know, it's getting too late in the season for us to be making some of the same mistakes we've been making.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what this entire season has been about has the storyline's been, well, this Redbird team has a lot to work on. They have a lot that they could really make adjustments for. Obviously, this upcoming offseason is going to be really, really important for this team to decide what their future is. But to be able to come up with two wins in a row, two close wins, and edge them out, one really, really big win against a big rival and another one that shouldn't have been quite as close, but at the end of the day, they still win. I think the best thing you can do is look at the bright side and look at what good came out of it, the things that went well, because we've known all year that there's a lot of bad, there's a lot of frustrating parts of how this team has played this year. The best thing, at least in terms of how this team moves forward from these past couple games, is to be able to look at the positives and then obviously knowing and making adjustments for the future for the next games to make sure those mistakes don't happen again.
You know, it was really interesting because I think you asked the question last night to head coach Peden about, you know, the condensed rotation that he's been running over the past few games. We've seen the production there, though. You know, Kendall Lewis, he's played 40 minutes in the last two games. He's had double doubles in the past three games. So his production, his leadership has really helped some of the other guys blossom and continue to show their attributes on the offensive side as well as defense as well.
So the Redbirds are heating up when it matters in the last month of the season. Now 5-8 in conference, good for just about the top of that bottom tier of the conference, if that makes any sense. It's about ninth in the conference. But the interesting thing, and almost to the Redbirds' detriment, where they really can't climb seeds unless something happens here, is, get this, the top four teams in the Missouri Valley right now going into February, Drake, Southern Illinois, Bradley, Belmont, all 9 wins, followed by Indiana State, Murray State, Northern Iowa, and Missouri State, all 8 wins. And then there's the back four, and ISU is the closest to that group of 8, all separated by one game, and ISU's 5-8. And then there's Valpo with 4 wins, UIC 1, and Evansville nothing. So there is these bottom 4, but then the top 8 are all separated by a game. Any win, any loss, and the entire top 8 gets shaken up. And all 12 teams make that conference tournament, but ISU will need to continue this streak and hope for the best that some of those top 8 teams start to lose if they want to climb out of that 9-seed spot.
That's just why it's so important to be able to play spoiler. That's the one thing that you get when you are one of those bottom seed teams, a team that doesn't really look like at this point it's going to be all that easy to improve your standing for tournaments or anything like that, unless you can really string something together. So to be able to at least go up against your rivals, against your teams that you have to live with the results of that game until the next time you play them, you might as well give it your all for that.
And, you know, we will be oblivious to think that locker room doesn't know that. They definitely have social media. They definitely have access to, you know, the internet. So they see that. They hear everything that even we're saying. Maybe they're driving down the road right now, listening to us right now. But they're going to be playing with some passion. Every single game, they understand what's at risk. You know, you see it in the press conferences. Kendall Lewis speaks with conviction. He speaks with that umph. Like he wants
really
to prove
does.
Something. You can tell that he has a chip on his shoulder.
And he wasn't always that way. This is no knock on Kendall ever. But I talked to him in press conferences last year and the year before, and he was always more, dare I say, like timid about it because he just wasn't as confident. But I think his confidence in answering those questions really is shown on the court because he knows maybe he's not the conventional leader because he's not the leading scorer night in and night out, but he said himself last night he knows his role on that team, and he is the leader of that team, and he knows it. He's not afraid to say it on the press conference, and he did last night. He said, I know my role, and no one can stop me when it comes to getting boards, and he was right.
And there's a fact, right? To think about it, like I broke it down, I said he's had 3 double-doubles in the past 3 games, but 2 of those games he's played the entire game.
Right.
So it just shows what he brings to the court night in and night out.
Yeah, and you don't become a leader without acting like a leader and talking like a leader. You can say, oh, I'm the leader of this team because I'm the most talented player on it. But if you don't go into those press conferences and have the swagger like he has, then no one's going to believe you. No one's going to actually take your word for it. To be able to have him, as you said, coming off of last year where he didn't really have that going for him yet, transitioning into this year, he seems to have finally found his role, and he's certainly looking a lot better for it.
You know, it's funny. I was looking up the Missouri Valley Conference standings because I wanted to read that off as I did, And I have, every time Google puts you on the NCAA men's basketball by conference, you have to kind of go through alphabetically. So I passed the I passed the Atlantic 10, Loyola 1-8 in their new conference after leaving the Missouri Valley. What do you think about Drew Valentine and the Ramblers? 1-8, 7-14 overall, and they left the Valley specifically for men's basketball. It seemed, you know, not intentionally, but that's what everyone seemed to think.
You know, it's so crazy. As soon as they left the Valley, that I just stopped hearing about them altogether.
Right?
And I've got a buddy on that team. We graduated in high school together, and you know, you hate to see it. Hate to see it. When they came to ISU, I always enjoyed those games, just watching them. 1-8 though, I don't know. Just to see that fall
off. Well, that conference is so interesting because they're the type of conference where like you obviously the conference champ makes it and you might get an at large bid or two, but like it's no team that'll ever go past like the Sweet 16 at the highest. It's like but it's a bunch of teams that usually are at about the Sweet 16 or like the you know the round of 32. VCU, St. Louis, Dayton, Davidson, theoretically Loyola a couple times recently, crazy enough to say. So that's just like a mid-college basketball conference. And the fact that they're 1-8 in that conference after leaving the Valley because they consider themselves to have reached a new level, it's humbling for the Ramblers.
And to me, when I remember the news breaking of that happening, there was a lot of rumblings around campus that was like, man, this is like a sidestep. Like they're not going to a much better conference. This is going to be pretty much the same thing, and they're not going to be any more impressive for winning this conference than the other. But now you've got them struggling in it. So I think they made, you know, they lost some people, they lost some seniors, and that team looks quite a bit different than it did a year ago. But, you know, for the most part, they shouldn't be that drastically off that if you are, in fact, in a relatively similar conference in terms of strength – that you're performing like that because it's been very, very disappointing for Loyola to me.
Well, this is off topic. We're still talking about Loyola, but who really cares? Because Oklahoma, poor Porter Moser is now is 12-10 in the season, so they're not doing terrible. It was never just the Ramblers. It was a great coach and a relatively easier conference, I think, was the key for them when they were doing really, really well. And I think it just goes to show it's humbling that, yeah, the Valley is competitive in and of itself, but as soon as you get out of their conference, all of a sudden there's always bigger fish.
Yeah, and Coach Leah Johnson for the Redbirds went to Michigan State, and that Spartans team did not really look all that good this year. They weren't very impressive. They weren't really leading their conference in anything. It just goes to show that you can't just be, you know, assuming that someone's going to switch to somewhere else and do well. It takes a lot of building and takes a lot of work to make that happen. And I think going back to what we've been talking about to start the show, it's the same situation for Peden. He's got a situation that was handed to him by the coach before, and credit to him, he didn't just go in there and immediately say, oh, I'm going to make all these big changes because I feel like I know what I'm going to do. You've got to give it – it might be frustrating, but give it some time and see how that team plays with you leading it, and then you can go into an offseason and make those adjustments and make those changes, because if you haven't played with a team before it, you're not really going to have the plan to work.
But, you know, adjustments take time. Adjustments take time, especially when you're going from point A to point B. When I think about it, every moving part, every role on a team is valuable, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's on the court, whether it's in the recovery room. Everybody needs to play a similar role to be able to produce a champion at the end of the day. And when something is off kilter from what you came from and it's not the same, you don't get the same treatment that you used to, it's tough to adjust to it. And you kind of have to find a different groove once you're in it for a substantial amount of time.
Redbirds, Ramblers, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all because an NFL great hung him up yesterday, and it makes me sad. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the greatest quarterback to ever touch the gridiron. That's Tom Brady. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Illinois State Winkers Wright, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, Redbird County. Let's fly.
Yesterday morning on the beach, that's when I woke up, opened my Instagram, and saw Tom Brady on the beach.
What a way to go out.
Yeah, he said, I'm retiring. You know, that's what my mom said when she texted me about it. She's like, wait, he's out there in a nice beach, probably in California or Florida. It doesn't seem like life's too bad. But he said for good this time. He said it himself. Didn't want Adam Schefter to report it, and then not this time. He just said it himself in a vlog on the beach, and I respect it. But he said this is it. And if this truly is it, he is – and we've talked about on the show. I'm a huge fan. But in general, he is undisputedly the greatest football player ever, in my opinion. That's what I would have to say.
You know – I told you before we started the show, Moves like this make you appreciate just the greats.
Yeah.
You talk about Tom Brady, LeBron James, et cetera, et cetera. To see a piece like him, you know, he's not going to be in the NFL anymore. We're never going to see him throw a pass. I'm sorry, Mikey. I know
No.
I know it's really hurting you. It hurts.
Here's the thing, though. Like, I wasn't always a huge Brady guy. Like, just in his last couple years, I really, really, really started to respect him. I really enjoyed watching his games. It was around the same time the Bears weren't going to do anything. So I was like, all right, well, I got to have something that I want to root for.
Was it about the same time that you learned his full name to recite?
I actually learned his full name, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. I learned his full name, and I think I really, really, really started to enjoy watching. Well, okay, like 2017 type era, but like when we had to do previews.
The Flakegate?
Yeah, the championship that year. But we were predicting the championship winner for the Vedette when I was a writer at the Vedette my freshman year, and there was probably 8 or 9 people who wrote a little quick paragraph between the Chiefs and the Bucks who would win. And I think I was one of like 2 people who went with the Bucks, and I said something along the lines of never, like the same thing I'd always say to Dane, like never bet against, and then I put his full name.
Yeah.
And it worked out, and I just kind of like rode that since then. I was like, all right, well, I'm never going to bet against him. Like, there's no way. And it really does make me a little bit upsetting to see him go out like this, because he didn't leave. We talked the other day, David, he didn't leave New England and Bill Belichick to play for Todd Bowles. He left New England to play for Bruce Arians, another Hall of Fame head coach, or very close to it. And it stinks that I saw a meme today that the 3 people who could ever stop Tom Brady, Nick Foles, Eli Manning, and Todd Bowles. That's pretty much it.
Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, that too.
And this might be a little bit embarrassing to admit on this podcast especially, but when I was a little kid, every single time we would go into the championship game for the NFL, I would always try and make a prediction of who would win, and I probably made 5 or 6 predictions of who would win before I was finally correct. The first time I was ever correct was the Seahawks versus the Patriots when the news broke out about the game before, and I was basically just saying – oh, they're being unfair to him. I don't think it really makes that big of a difference, and I think that that's going to make him want to play harder, and I think that's going to make him win. And he finally won that game, and I was finally correct, and that was the last time I can ever remember being happy about anything good happening to Tom Brady in my life, because then I finally started to learn the game and realize that he's not the type of guy I want to really root for anymore just because he wins all the time.
I think the greatest thing that will be on Brady's resume at the end of the day, and my friend and I said this yesterday, was – yes, he was an all-time great in New England, but the fact that he left that system and won a championship in Tampa, yes, he had a lot around him and another close to a Hall of Fame head coach, but the fact that he won in that system and did it against probably his successor in the best quarterback in the league, in Patrick Mahomes, is impressive and still will always be impressive. I wish it could have gone one more time, but you know, looking back at a couple years ago, beating the Chiefs in that game is impressive.
You know, didn't he give the sense that he was kind of going to test the waters to see if he was going to maybe potentially keep going? I was very surprised when I saw the announcement on my phone. I woke up one morning and I saw it. I was like, this, you know, is he joking? Is this going to be some type of commercial? Like, what's going on here? And, you know, to see him go, like I was saying earlier, it does hurt. If we're going to go through our favorite Tom Brady memories, I'm probably going to have to go back. Which Super Bowl was the Atlanta Falcons 28-51?
Championship game, yeah. 51.
Man, when I tell you, I think I fell asleep at halftime and woke up midway through the third. Right at the beginning of the fourth, because that's when it really started to pick up. I was like, if this guy does this, I can't fight anymore. Drew Brees is no match.
Well, like, yeah. The past story I love about that game is that the writers who had deadlines that immediately after the game had to get their stories up and stuff like that had a drafted pretty much finished story just waiting for the final score after halftime, ready to go, saying Matty Ice and the Falcons were Super Bowl champs in 2017. And then here comes Tom Brady and Julian Edelman and Bill Belichick, and they come out there and come back from 28-3 with minutes left in the third quarter. It remains this day one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
Still don't know how he did it.
It's incredible.
I think it's so underrated how us as fans view football, you know, opposed to you actually being a football. Football is a tough sport.
Oh, yeah.
And the quarterback position is probably the toughest position besides cornerback.
Fair enough.
When you think about it, the quarterback is controlling everything that is moving. It's like the heart of the offense, literally. Mm-hmm. Which is why, ironically, they're in the middle. But, you know, to see him do it for as long as he's done it, you know, longevity, the championships that he's obtained, the MVPs, it's just have a career. You know, I wish him nothing but the best.
Well, first of all, I want to say that it's sad that the Dallas Cowboys gets to be the franchise that gets to say they were the last ones to beat him. Also, it was time. I said this last week, if I remember correctly, but it was definitely time to hang it up. As a Raiders fan, there were rumors that they were considering getting him, and I am so, so glad that I don't have to worry about that, it looks like, because he's too – in the same way that, like, when the Bucs won it all, it was because Brady had people around him.
Yeah.
First of all, they had some good talent in the receiving corps already, and then he was able to add the pieces that fit his playing style and make that work, and they were able to win a championship that way. When you have this Raiders roster that you have, it's too far away, especially defensively, but even in terms of the offense and just the fact that McDaniels is not a good coach at all, you're too far away from being able to build around a guy that's already mid-40s, and it's going to take far too much that you're going to be able to give up if you want to also be able to add the pieces around it that you would still have to go through to get it.
And, you know, I know we can kind of shift this segment a little bit, because I know that's what we were planning to do originally. To stick on the Raiders – you mentioned the coaching. Is that what's wrong? Because I saw a post today that said, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers could have a reunion with Devontae Adams. The talent on the offense is there.
Mm.
I don't care what anybody says. I still think Darren Waller is a top 10 at least.
Mm.
Devontae Adams is top 2, in my opinion, when he's healthy and he has a well-working quarterback, which Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady is. Josh Jacobs had arguably the arguably the best running back in the league this year.
Yeah.
So offensive talent, I don't know what the offensive line looks like. I'm not the super fan like that.
Mm.
But, you know, offensively, you got the weapons. You talked about defense having to improve. I know there's kind of like a stigma around the Raiders organization that they just draft very poorly.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because they added they completely changed the way they ran the team a few years ago. They fired their GM and replaced him with the NFL analyst. I don't know why I'm
blanking.
John Gruden. John Gruden was the coach.
Mike Mayock.
Yes, yeah. Mayock. And I was very excited about Mayock because I knew that he was a good analyst. But then you get this draft and, you know, everything changed. Like when you kind of felt like the team was really theirs, everything changed. But a lot of the draft picks were really, really bad. There were a few that panned out. Crosby was great, for example. Jacobs was a great pick, especially considering how high of a risk it's typically considered to draft a running back in the first round. But Jacobs was a great pickup. So they had a few good picks, but then they also had a lot of really bad picks. And they added a bunch of draft picks to be able to add to their defense back when they traded with the Bears and with the Texans. And instead of being able to improve, they really just kind of squandered a lot of those picks, picked a lot of bad wide receivers, and they're able to add someone like Devontae Adams because of the affinity that he has for the team, but they're still just so far off defensively. You cannot survive that, especially considering you don't have, you know, the 2016 Derek Carr anymore. You have the 2022 Derek Carr. It's not going to work that way anymore.
I have a question. So the NFL keeps posting this picture of Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, and Big Ben, and, you know, your childhood's over, cashing in on nostalgia. Everyone had that poster in their childhood bedroom, whatever. But they, you know, and I get it. And, you know, there is an era right behind them, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, even Matthew Stafford, who are right out with one foot out the door already, too. And so it comes to the point where, yeah, we've reached a new era of quarterbacks in the NFL, and I feel like, I just wrote it down, off the top of my head, I feel like there's five that have kind of set themselves apart after this season. Mahomes, Burrow, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Trevor Lawrence. And who is the sixth in that crew? And I feel like Lawrence is on the edge too, but who is the sixth in that crew? Is it Tua? Is it, if he's healthy, is it maybe Justin Fields if he has another good year? Is it one of the year's quarterbacks this year who gets drafted? David, you have a face. Who do you think that
sixth
is?
You know, I hate that Lamar Jackson's name wasn't mentioned. I know
that
he
is
had
true. Lamar should
injuries.
Be up there too.
Pay this man especially. You know, he deserves it. He's a MVP type player when healthy. And I will tell you this, and we'll stick on Lamar Jackson for 2 seconds. He is the, besides Justin Fields, he is the least invested in quarterback in the league.
True.
You give him J.K. Dobbins, Rashad Bateman, and you expect him to go out there. And let's just be real. You know his arm isn't the best.
Yeah.
So why don't you put a player like – go out and invest in a player like Devontae Adams?
Well, I feel like I could have had Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson in that group, especially Lamar. But I just felt like after this year, it was easy to forget. I probably should have had Lamar in that group too. But looking at at least the top three that I said there, Mahomes, Burrow, and Allen, I feel like those three have set themselves apart as that's your crew. That's Cemented. Your three guys. Cemented. That's your Manning brothers and Brady.
The other two picks are always going to be a toss-up when you're talking about the top six, but the Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow, that's going to be cemented. I think Justin Herbert had a down year, but last year, this time, I was saying the same thing that you are. Justin Herbert's is top five when you know he's healthy. I know he had a nasty rib injury that was just lingering throughout the season.
Him all year,
And then that last sixth spot, in my opinion, I'm when he's healthy, I'm taking Lamar.
Yeah.
He's won an MVP. He's been to the playoffs. I know he hasn't had the craziest success in the playoffs, but he's been with limited resources. So just imagine you put some resources around him. I'm speaking like a Bears fan. That's what happened.
Is Dak Prescott or Daniel Jones even touching that group?
Not close. I think Daniel Jones maybe. Nah, that's a stretch as well.
I feel like those two are both very similar, and they're both just a couple years older than all the people I named off, too.
Yeah, to me, there's a huge gap between 3 and 4. I think there's also a very, very wide gap between that and 6th. I think that Lamar certainly deserves credit for being an MVP, but because of the fact that he's a rushing-type quarterback, you can only be at the top of your game for so long. I think that's also why Justin Fields is probably a better option than Lamar right now, because I feel like he's at the beginning of his great running stretch. I think Lamar Jackson is near the end or at the end. We don't even know where he's going to be able to play next season. So I would probably put Justin Fields maybe slightly ahead of him in terms of, you know, the next few years. I don't know if he's better right now, but I think 2 or 3 years from now, his stats are going to be better than what on that same stretch Lamar had.
Sure. But that scares me for the Bears. Because if this is Fields' prime of being that mobile quarterback, and we see what happened with the Ravens over Lamar's prime of that, I mean, I don't know. The Bears got to use that as a case study and try and be a little bit better.
First of all, you know, I don't think that Justin Fields has even entered his prime just yet.
No.
I think once he gets this arm developed, it's really going to tell a lot about his development and where his career is going to go after this next season. I know a lot of people say that every single year, but really for this year, the Bears have it all written out for him. $98 million in cap space, the number one overall draft pick. You have the option to trade that back and get a boatload of other assets for your team. There's no excuses why Justin Fields shouldn't be a very electric quarterback, not just on his feet next year.
There's no reason why Poles and the Bears should not get to work and build that team around him. Because you can't really use last year. Like, I get he had, what was it, the most rushing yards for a quarterback in Bears history, and he was close for NFL history, but you can't really use that because the team was not even trying to win. If you go out there with all your $100 million in cap space and really put a team around him, and it's still, you know, he's good, but the team isn't, then you can start to say, okay, maybe it is a Lamar-type situation where, yeah, he's really good, but is this team going to be good with him?
As I've said before, this is a pivotal offseason for the Bears because they weren't going for wins last year, but they were going for giving him an opportunity to prove himself and prove that he's good. They had great, great production out of him last year, but now you've got to find a way. Either, to me, I don't think you need to add a whole lot at wide receiver. I think trading the trade that they made at wide receiver and giving up a late first rounder this year was kind of dumb, but I just feel like all you really need offensively is a good tight end to be able to dump it off to, maybe a couple people that you can get drag routes to, and someone that, you know, you want good enough wide receivers, but you don't need superstar wide receivers to pull that off. I think other than that, you would just need to be able to really improve your defense, and you've got yourself a good team for a good 4 or 5 year window, probably.
What about Jalen Hurts too? I didn't mention him yet. Is he?
He's representing
the NFC.
At least 6. I think he's been more impressive than Trevor Lawrence. I don't know how his name slipped my mind. He was an MVP candidate before he got hurt. I think he's been very impressive. And we know Trevor Lawrence is the QB of the future. We knew that he was a generational talent, but you know, he did everything that he needed to do and more when he was leading that Eagles offense, and look at where they are now.
Trevor Lawrence will be very good in the NFL, but he will always be a step behind after that absolutely wasted rookie year in Jacksonville.
So with Jalen Hurts, is very interesting because you can't say, oh, this is the system, oh, he has a lot of superstars around him, because when you take out that Jalen Hurts, you know, part to that offense, the Eagles were very bad. They started losing games. Mm-hmm. Offense wasn't able to score. But when you put him back in and you have the performances you've had so far in the playoffs, he didn't take any it's like he didn't even take any time off. He was plugged back into that offense, and it was just as electric as it can be. And which is why, you know, this big game coming up is really going to be interesting.
We're going to have a lot of coverage of that big game next week. I think we're going to do a pretty big game-centered show next week. But so we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have a quick segment a little bit about the NBA. And speaking of greats, LeBron James, you're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? Dad, you're the GOAT. It's my favorite ad because it works for today, because we talked about Tom Brady, and by some standards, LeBron James is also on that level. I am still on the Michael Jordan train, but I, as David said when we were preparing for the show today, moments like Tom Brady retiring really do make you appreciate the great. So I have to give all respect where it's due to LeBron James, who is just so close to getting that all-time scoring record, David.
My goodness, is this a GOAT show? You know, Tom
it seems
Brady,
like it.
LeBron, Tim Zeiler back. We're just talking about a whole bunch of GOATs tonight. You know, like you said, LeBron James, 89 points away from becoming the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. That's just a accomplishment that, you know, it raises a lot of questions. It raises a lot of questions. He was interviewed a couple nights ago asking if there was any pressure, you know, knowing that you had this big goal on your shoulders coming up. He was like, there's no pressure. I'm going to get there. You know, I plan on playing for the next few years. It's a matter of time before I do it. It's just, you know, we just got to be patient. I don't have any pressure. I'm just going out to play basketball.
What do you think about the sorry to cut you off. What do you think about in warm-ups, people have been spotting him recently trying the sky hook. Do you think he's going to try and break the record with Kareem's signature shot?
He's a Laker. He has to.
He has to.
That's kind of sick.
It would be really cool if he does.
That right there is going to get his jersey in the banners, if it's not already in there.
Oh, yeah.
For the Lakers, at least.
Oh, no, I think it is. I think he'll be one of those few players that has his number retired by a couple different teams.
You think 23 for the Lakers would get retired?
You just said if he gets the all-time scoring record there, if he won a championship there, COVID year or not, I mean, he's the second greatest, if not the greatest, basketball player of all time. Any team, it's not like this is the end of his career, like Wayne Gretzky on the Rangers, and he plays, you know, three games. He's played there for 3-4 years. Maybe it's been slightly underwhelming, but a ring's a ring.
But, you know, you think about this GOAT conversation. The GOAT conversation itself, I think, is very subjective, because you have so many factors that you're putting into play, whether it's the rings, whether it's the points, whether it's just overall impact. I think the most dominant player to ever play the game, Shaquille O'Neal, the most talented maybe in the playoffs, Kobe Bryant. And then this MJ versus LeBron debate is very tough to think about, because for one, they played in two different eras. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that the era that Michael Jordan was brought up on was a lot harder, a lot grittier than what LeBron has had to endure. Another thing, you know, LeBron's record in the finals, I think it's that's going to require some research, but I know that it's not perfect. You know, Michael Jordan went 6-0 in the finals.
LeBron, I think, is like 4-6 or 4-7, I think, something like that. I can count in my head. Braden, say something about LeBron. I'm gonna count in my head.
But I'll say this. So for both of these situations, they've changed over the past couple of years, because in NFL Championship Game 51, I think, was around the time that it became a lot harder to figure out any way that Tom Brady is not the greatest of all time. And I think at that time, for the LeBron debate, it was still pretty hard to find a way for LeBron to be the greatest of all time over Jordan. I think now you're at the point where there's no discussion, no argument for anyone other than Brady. But I do think that argument is still probably around, probably pretty even in between LeBron and MJ. I would lean MJ, because MJ lost 3 years of some of his best years of his life playing baseball. Tom Brady drafted in baseball but never played during the highs of his career. I think if you give MJ those 3 years back, and the reason that he lost those 3 years was because of something tragic happening to him as well, losing his father. You've got to take that into account and realize someone like MJ would have had much better stats if he got those 3 years back. I would want to certainly keep that in the back of my mind when I'm looking at this. And I think that also it's great for the sport that you can have this debate, that you can have this argument instead of just having it a battle for number two, because it's fun to be able to debate who's the greatest of all time and why do you think so. If you've got a conversation like the NFL where there's no debate for it anymore, who's the second greatest of all time, well, how much less fun is that argument? It's quite a bit different.
Hold on, David. Hold on. I know you want to say something, but I counted in my head. It was on the Cavs the first time, the Spurs. On the Cavs the second time, the Warriors three times. On the Heat, it was the Spurs again and the Mavericks. And so he won four times, lost six times, 10 trips. And I looked it up to make sure, but I wanted to see if I can count in my head.
And I, you know, if we go to, I know he's not retired yet, but that 2016 ring.
Oh yeah.
The incredible. Down 3-1 versus the Warriors 73-19.
Right there with the Brady and Falcons thing we were talking about. Yeah, it's right there. It's just that moment. Yeah.
But just, you know, going back to the, I guess, GOAT debate, it's always going to be a toss up. You think about Michael Jordan, he only played 15 seasons in the NBA total. So when you talk about points, you know, you can't really, you know, equate that because he played a substantially less time than, you know, LeBron, Kobe. And then thinking about LeBron, he's a stat sheet stuffer. He's always been, even at this day and age, I don't think I've seen anybody his age produce to the level that he's playing at right now. He's cementing that for his legacy. But I'll tell you one thing that really hurt LeBron was Curry's fourth ring last year. Because now that they have the same amount of rings, it's like it waters down what LeBron has done, even if it's just a little bit. I don't know if it's possible. I know LeBron wants to play with his kid. Actually, I have a fun fact. I played 2K the other day and Matt put together Bronny James and LeBron, and I actually won a ring. So I got LeBron his
what
fifth.
Team?
We were on the Lakers.
Okay.
And I think I had to give up Anthony Davis or something like that. But it was worth it. He got his fifth ring. So if he can do that in real life, maybe I'll be a little bit more willing to say that he's the GOAT. But as for right now, I'm from Chicago, so I'm going to continue to say Michael Jordan 1A, Derrick Rose 1B, and then LeBron 1C. Oh,
I think what's important,
David, that was your best segment, your best statement you've ever made in the show, like that entire thing. But anyway,
what's really important in this conversation too that we're not focusing is the stuff other than the stat sheet. How did you transcend the game? How did you change the game? How did you grow the game of basketball? And I think for a large part of LeBron's career, Steph Curry was doing at least as much to very grow true. The game of basketball and make people excited about the NBA, to love the NBA. He basically brought back NBA from the depths in terms of like its argument between that and college. A lot of people kind of changed their mind and got more into NBA because of someone like Steph Curry. I think LeBron was also transcending too, but MJ was, I mean, you would find a Michael Jordan jersey in France, in Croatia, anywhere that they you look, him. You could find that stuff. They would know who he is and how good he was. And I mean, he's just straight up, like, there's no way around the fact that he is just absolutely legendary because of the way that he grew the game of basketball and made it his own, and no one's going to forget either of those players for that, but Jordan really needs to be remembered for that.
Did somebody draft Bronny, then you had to trade Anthony Davis?
No, I got a
draft. Go back to it.
So I got a draft pick, and we actually got, you know, it was actually funny because I didn't have the number one pick. I had like the number two pick, and somebody else picked, I don't know who else is in Bronny's class, but they picked someone else, didn't pick Bronny. I don't know how you messed that up. But yeah, I drafted Bronny, and we went to the chip the first year, and actually that was LeBron's last year.
So who did you trade Anthony Davis for?
A draft pick from, ooh, this is going to be a good one. I don't know.
Either way, it was for picks.
It was for picks. I didn't, you know, cap space.
Oh, man. I'm surprised he wasn't retired in the sim by then.
Wait, are you going to make LeBron the coach? Because you can do that in 2K, which is a fantastic feature, by the way. I'm pretty sure they still have it.
Where that's great.
Anytime a player retires, like Tim Duncan and stuff, you can sign them and make them either assistant or head coach.
That's great.
You could have LeBron coach LeBron Bronny.
Think about that, though.
Realistically, I think he could be a really good coach someday.
Realistically.
Yeah.
LeBron, and we've heard it a lot more now than ever, now that he's really approaching this record, he is this his whole career story is just out of a fairy tale almost.
Really? Seriously.
You've never seen him really get in trouble that much. You know, the accolades are all there. He's the only thing that he hasn't accomplished is that DPOI. I know he really wants it. I don't know if he's going to get it just because of what the talent we have in the league today.
Yeah.
But
and no one's holding out his case for him. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Yeah, exactly.
He's really accomplished a lot in his career, and to do that both on and off the court, whether it's with his shoe company, Beach by Dre. I know he's sponsored with them. Sprite. We've seen him in commercials. He's done just so much.
Want a Sprite cranberry?
He opened a school for it was an elementary school.
In Cleveland, yeah.
Scholarships. Mm. Just, you know, the guy has really had a very picture-perfect career. I know everything is not perfect, obviously, but, yeah. You know, hats off to him. He's really done a good job.
We never forgot where he was from either. Yeah. Even now that he's in L.A., it's better for his business, better for the end of his basketball career. But he still, you know, has that school in Cleveland, still roots on Twitter for all Cleveland sports, and is still a big fan of the Cavaliers, too. Every time Donovan Mitchell plays well, he tweets about the Cavs, which starts the speculation train that he's going to end his career there. But I doubt it.
Really? You don't think so? I think if there's any other team,
it could
be them.
I don't think he's going anywhere but the Lakers. I think this is the Lakers. Like, it's it. Like, yeah. Done. I think. I mean,
I can see that.
It'll be a couple
Cleveland.
More years. I mean, it depends, honestly, though, because I also love the scenarios people post about, like, if Bronny gets drafted to, like, somewhere, like, hilarious. Like, either a rival of LeBron's over here, like the Warriors or the Celtics or something, or the Raptors even. Or there's the scenario, like, Bronny more likely gets drafted to a team that's just, you know, doesn't have very much money, is perennially not a very good team.
Can't afford him.
You know.
Could you imagine this? Bronny gets drafted by the Hornets.
Right. And then LeBron has to end his career on the Hornets. Like,
whose owner is Michael Jordan.
Oh, I forgot about that, too. Yeah.
That would be insane.
Or, like, the Pelicans. Well, I guess the Pelicans are pretty decent this year. But just teams year in and out who, like, just aren't as marquee names as, you know, the Boston Celtics or the Los Angeles Lakers. It would be pretty funny if after Miami and the Cavs and the Lakers, LeBron has to finish on a glorified G League team.
I think that's good, though, because to be able to, you know, start a career for your own hometown, your home area, and be on a team that is, you know, a small market, not known as anything flashy. You know, at this point, he's been able to be humbled in his career for playing on a team like that and understanding what it's like and how much that means to your city, that I think ending a career would be pretty fitting to be in some place like that, even if it's not Cleveland, if it's, you know, Charlotte.
He did make the Cavaliers relevant. I'll give him that. He really has made the Cavaliers relevant. And we're going to wrap up the segment on that. We're going to take a little bit of a longer break, but when we come back, we're going to have Tim Zalbeck and John Rosny in the Red Zone for us to talk about Redbirds women's basketball. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMT.
As David said, continuing the GOAT segment, talk about Tim Zalabak, John Rosny, and the Illinois State women's basketball team, and they are on a 8-game win streak, a historic streak that has led them to the top spot in the Missouri Valley Conference. And who's in their way of a win tonight? I-74 rival Bradley at home. This is going to be a marquee matchup, and we got a great crew for you for that one. But before we head out to CEFQ, David, Braden, what do you guys got to say about this matchup?
You know, ISU is impressed all year. One of the best teams in their conference. They've all, you know, played very well together so far this season. And you're going against a Bradley team that you should easily beat tonight. There's no reason why, you know, you should have any hiccups. You know, you think about basketball as such a fluctuant sport, whether you're on or off shooting, but the Redbirds have shown all year that they can show up every single night and play to a high level. So this game right here specifically should be a pretty easy one for them.
And if you were to take that recording and send it to Bradley, I'm sure that would be exactly what Bradley's been hearing all week long. They've been telling themselves that, oh, no one expects us to beat this team. This team's too good. And they're also our biggest rival. Let's give it our all. So I think that despite the fact that in terms of talent, this is nowhere close, I don't think, the fact that Bradley wants this badly could be a factor that makes it a much more competitive game. And I think that's what's going to make it a fun game to be able to enjoy here tonight.
You're right. They have nothing to lose. 3-18, you know, you're not really looking for longevity in the season. You're kind of just trying to get out of the season, make adjustments and come back next year. But, you know, if you're looking at ISU, they have everything to lose, you know, momentum. They have You know, this is a must-win game. You talk about, take it to the pros for a second. You know, the Bulls, they always lose the easy games.
Yeah.
You know, you can't find yourself in this situation if you're the Redbirds. Every win is needed, and especially against teams that, you know, are obviously below you.
Who better to talk about the 9-1 in conference Illinois State Redbirds than our actual broadcasters for the night, Tim Zalabak and John Rosny. Let's see if we can get them from CFQ Arena. Tim, John, can you, do you guys hear us?
Mikey, hello.
How you doing? Yeah, loud and clear.
I have my headphones on. I don't know if I can hear. I think David's got you though, right, David?
All right, David,
you started off if you can hear him.
Yeah, so how you guys doing? I just want to, you know, talk about the game really quick. What are your thoughts on tonight's game? What do you think the Redbirds need to do to get the win?
Absolutely, David. Well, CFQ Arena is starting to come alive here a little bit, and we only agree with you guys back in the studio. This is going to be a one-way game. Looking at the stat sheet, that's really all we can say. 9-1 in MVC for ISU, total domination. Then just looking for their first win is Bradley in the MVC. So are they going to do it tonight? I'm not sure, but I'm rooting for the Redbirds, of course.
All right, Tim, I got a headset on now so I can hear your beautiful voice. How
awesome.
You doing out there?
We're doing well, yeah. Good. Always a good time at CFQ.
Is it filling up at all yet, or no? Because, you know, we're about a little under half an hour till game time.
You know, weekday, we are a half hour till game time. We're going to see a lot more bodies fill these seats, I feel.
John Rosny, how you doing out there?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm ready for a good game.
So I know you guys were talking a little bit before about this team and coming into this game 9-1 in conference. And Bradley, as you heard us talking about before we sent it live to CFQ, 0-10 in the season. If you're Bradley, what are you saying in the locker room ahead of this game against your rival on the road?
Well, yeah, you know, like Davion said, that we're carrying through it as ISU, a 9-1 lead. I don't see any reason for ISU to change the formula of what's winning. But Bradley, they're facing that 0-10 record for the season right now. So they'll be trying to drive themselves to actually get the win.
And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, you know, just a few minutes ago. Bradley has everything to lose. They have nothing to lose just based off of this 3-18 record. Obviously, they're going to come out swinging and trying to take down one of the best in their conference. So, you know,
of course,
I agree.
So what about Christian Gillespie and the Illinois State Redbirds? How do they not get complacent here on an 8-game win streak facing a team without any wins? Tim, if you're the Redbirds, how do you keep the legs
fresh? I think
what
they do, they continue to remain adaptive in the environments they're in, whether they're at home or they're away. They're continuously talking with their team, seeing which energy each player brings to the court and which strengths they bring. And I think it's a matter of finding that balance between all of those assets that are on the court. That's what brings them the win, and that's what keeps us at our 9-1 record for the season right now.
I totally agree with you there, John. This is a pretty mature team we're seeing here from the Redbirds, and, of course, Christian Gillespie is that rock of a coach. It's going to be a confident team for the Redbirds. They got to go out and play their game. 8-game win streak, like you said, Mikey. They go out and play their game. They're playing themselves tonight. And, you know, the Redbirds, they just got to keep being confident.
They're playing themselves tonight.
Tim, they're playing themselves tonight. You can only beat yourself. You can only win against
exactly.
yourself.
Tim, did you hear we were comparing you to LeBron James and Tom Brady earlier?
I never want to hear that. All right, I'm neither of those people.
Well, we were calling it the GOAT Show, so it's a compliment to you.
Okay, well, I like to hear it then.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We're gonna send it back to the studio, but we will hear from you in about 10 minutes for the pregame. Sound good?
Thanks, Mikey.
Yeah, talk to you guys later. So that was Tim Zalabak and John Rosny. Great as always. Braden Fogerson is going to stick around and studio host for them tonight for the game. So you will hear him and those two for tonight's game. So definitely do not touch that dial and keep listening to Z&D tonight for Redbirds women's basketball. But we got about five more minutes on our show. And guys, I just want to talk a little bit more just about this team and going forward. Obviously, there's more games to be played after tonight's game against Bradley. There is a conference tournament to be played in Moline in a couple weeks. I believe Timmy Z and Braden are going to be on the calls for those games. So, you know, you're going to go into that tournament as the 1 or 2 seed. You're not going to play till Friday, but you still got to get wins on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to get that second straight March Madness bid. Tournament basketball is different. What do you think you want to see from the Redbirds before that tournament to really prove they have what it takes?
You got to keep the momentum, to be honest. Not like you're going in there, you must win every game, but I'm saying if you can stay consistent and look good and look like you guys can play well as a team, before the tournament starts, then you're going to have all the confidence that you need to go in there and roll in and play well. I think that's the most important thing to keep in mind, because everything else is just noise.
You know, tournament season itself is not the time where you want to be figuring it out. You want to be hitting your peak, hitting your stride once you hit the tournament season, so that you can give yourself the best chance to punch that ticket to, you know, the big tournament. So I think if you're the women's, you know, team, you have to be able, like you said, in these late games in the late season, you have to be able to get it to click, continue this hot, you know, streak that you've been on, and continue to play together and play through your leaders. I think that that's the most efficient way to, you know, solidify a pretty deep run, you know, this year.
All right, give me your score predictions for tonight's matchup at SFQ Arena between ISU and Bradley. David, what do you think?
Oh, you give it to me first.
You can take your time. You can think it through. Trade Anthony Davis or something. I'm never gonna let
or
you hear
Deanna
the end
Wilson
of that.
Or something like that.
Yeah, I'm never gonna let you hear the end of that
so
one.
So I'm gonna say I've gotta go Sco Birds. Give me 55-43. The Birds
like
are gonna win this, you know, confidently.
Braden?
I think this Birds team mostly keeps it relatively low scoring considering everything. So I think it won't be too high scoring game, but I think it'll be better than most. I think the Birds are going to be able to get at least 60. I'm going to give them 63 to Bradley's 49.
I'll go the long ball here. They've scored like almost 80 points, like three of the last four games. They scored 78 points on the nose in every game before the USC one, in which they only scored 55. Bradley, one of the worst teams in the Valley. If ISU goes out there confident, give me that 80 bomb.
Oh.
Give it to me. I want to wreck Bradley. Let's do ISU 80 and Bradley
12.
57. 57-80. That's going to be a blowout.
12 for Brady.
12 for Tom.
The last game between the two was 60-50 game. So I think that, you know, it's going to have to be played very much differently if that's going to line up, and I think that's definitely possible.
Well, they had a 70-56 to Belmont. They had a 78-68, so I need two things to cash in for this parlay. The Redbirds to score their most points this season, and ISU to allow only 57 points, which they only allowed 46 against a couple of teams recently, more recently 42 to USC, and that's going to be the end of this episode of the Red Zone. We're going to go right into the basketball game after you hear the close and a couple ads. Braden Fogerson will be back after he gets a sip of water. I'm sure you use your voice for an hour.
Yeah.
You're going to be back for the pregame show. But that's it for me and David, at least. This was another edition of the Red Zone. Thank you for listening.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again? Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.